Back to the Kevin Smith Show. As I said, my guest this evening is Dr. Roger Lear. And I gave you a little bit of an intro about Dr. Lear. And I think, as I said, most of you are already very well aware of who he is. But we have new people that join our genre of information, you know, every day. And may not yet be aware, so you need to go look up on the internet Alien Scalpel. You need to look up Dr. Roger Lear, L-E-I-R, and you will be amazed because there's tons of videos and lots of photographs and lots of stuff written about his work. Dr. Lear is probably best known as the guy who takes these alien implants out of people. Well, some of them turn out not to be alien implants. But sometimes there's no way to know till you go in there and excise the thing and then analyze it. But some of these are really, really very bizarre. He is also one of the key witnesses to a UFO incident that is probably one of the most bizarre and has some of the best video that has ever been shot of a UFO. And that took place in Turkey. So we're going to talk about the whole realm of stuff and some stuff you haven't even heard him talk about before. He's not even aware we're going to talk about that stuff, but we are. Dr. Lear, are you with us? Well, I can see him on my monitor, but apparently he cannot hear me. So we'll just give him a real quick little call here. And we'll see if we can't.
Hello.
Okay. It may be that he cannot hear. I've got him on the telephone, so he says that his audio on Skype is up and on, but apparently he can't hear us on Skype. All right, so for right now, we'll just do it on the telephone. As I was saying, Dr. Lear, we're going to be talking about some things that are all about, you know, the alien implants and also all about...
I can barely hear you right now.
Yeah, well, that's about how it's going to be on the phone, I'm afraid. We're getting a lot of some kind of... frying sound in the line from between you and us, but anyway, let's get an update. You had surgery today, right?
Yeah, I had had surgery today and surgery yesterday.
Okay.
Skype, but I don't know if I've turned the video on, so.
Yeah, we're barely getting some audio out of that. I think we're going to stick with the telephone.
Okay.
All right. You had surgery yesterday as well?
Yeah, I had a little basal cell cancer taken off of my face.
I see. And then you had eye surgery today, right?
Yeah, today I had a cataract done, so I'm seeing basically out of one eye. The other eye is pretty blurry still.
Uh-huh. Well, you're
but
pretty...
I had one eye done before, about a month ago, and just marvelous.
Well, I'll tell you what. You're a trooper for being willing to be with us tonight after all of that, and I appreciate you doing it.
Well, got to keep the mind busy, Kevin.
Well, that's right. That's right. It's been how long since I saw you out in California? Let's see, when was that? That was at the premiere of Moon Rising that I saw you.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So it's been a while.
Yeah, it sure has. A lot of stuff has been happening since then.
Well, let's get a little bit of an update. What's been going on that we perhaps have not heard about? Kind of give us a, bring us up to date on the world of Roger Lear.
Well, the world of Roger Lear involving the UFO subject is pretty broad and wild because I don't know if I told you last. I finished a book, which I swore I'd never do, so that's my eighth one. published in France.
And what is it about?
Well, it's called basically in the French language, it boils down to UFOs: The Final Frontier. And I go into the 14th, 15th, and 16th surgical cases that I've did, and published for the first time the full scientific data. So I get requests once in a while from people with a science background who want to look at the data.
Mm-hmm.
So I figure this is a good way they can look at it. And then on the other hand, see, there's always two sides to the coin. On the other hand, there are people who can look at data and haven't the slightest idea what they're looking at.
Yeah. That probably would be me.
So, but those individuals are the first to, critique your work in a negative fashion, because they don't basically, pardon the language, know what the hell they're looking at.
Uh-huh.
So I put material in here, and I say it's strictly for the scientist. Then we at the same time published a kind of a lay version of the interpretation of the material. So we did that with the surgeries, and showing all the latest findings. And then part of the book is on the latest in what's happened in Varginha, Brazil. I don't know if we discussed that previously or not.
Well, you and I have discussed Varginha, Brazil, but we have not. You're talking about what's the latest. I'm sure we have not discussed that.
Okay, well, let's see, just to review a little bit of the event itself, 1996 January, an extraterrestrial vehicle crash-landed in a small town of Varginha, that's V-A-R-G-I-N-H-A, a farming town of about 130,000 people in the state of Minas Gerais. And there was more attention that was paid to the survivors of the crash than there was to the vehicle, just a little bit different than Roswell. Three girls, young teenagers on their way home from work, saw one of the beings kneeling by a stone wall. A brick wall, rather, and they were not three abreast, but one behind each other. And when the first one saw him, from what she described, was an entity that was about 3 to 4 feet tall, and it was kneeling. It had brown skin that seemed to be oily, a very large head with three protuberances on top of the head going from the forehead to the rear portion of the head, a very thin neck, kind of more musculature in the lower extremity than the upper extremity, with red eyes. Well, seeing this thing and one of the big religions in Brazil is Catholicism, so she thought she saw the devil. So she turned around and screamed and started running as fast as she could. And then the girl behind her then witnessed the being and saw basically the same thing. I took a few more moments and looked at it. Not quite as fearful as the first one, but she also turned around and followed suit. And then the third girl stood there for a few minutes, and it turned its head around and looked at her, and it had big red eyes. And then she was fairly well convinced that this was something demonic, because in that area of Brazil, they're pretty much used to seeing wild animals and things, and she knew it wasn't an animal. Now, I did an interview with the three girls and the mother and grandmother, and they realized that after a time this was not an animal, but some kind of a being. They didn't know what it was. That same being was seen later in the day by two military police officers trying to cross the street, and from the area where the first girl saw the being to where the military police officer saw it was only about two blocks away, and it was standing on a corner trying to cross the street, and they realized that it was injured. So one young man who was in great physical condition, about 25 years of age, in the military police, which is a separate unit. Like, you know, we have the Navy and the Army and the Air Force and so on. Well, the military police in Brazil is a separate military, as is the fire department. Fire department is military in Brazil. And the reason I say that is farther along in the story, you'll see why. But this young man got out of a Jeep-like affair and went over and saw that the entity was injured, put his arm around him, and guided him without resistance back to the vehicle and put him, sat down and put him on his lap. Now, you know, here was a human being coming in contact with God knows what, no protective gear, no gloves, no mask, no thought of bacteria or viruses or whatever. And so they took him to a first aid station where they could do nothing with him, and then he wound up in a hospital undergoing a surgery under a military guard. And I interviewed the surgeon that did the operation for the fractured leg, and he was forced to do this by the military. It had a tremendous effect on his life. They were used to seeing military in the hospital because there was no, the nearest base, which was called Sergeant Camp, was about 30 kilometers from the main town of Varginha. And so when there was accidents that occurred on the base, they would take them to the hospital. So seeing military personnel there didn't really excite anybody too much. But then they started to take over the surgical area of the maternity ward, and got more personnel there, and then they began to wonder. Then they called him and told him that he was required to do a surgery, didn't tell him what. He was told to scrub and gown, go in the operating room, and there was a military guard placed at the door. They said he was not to leave until the job was done. So when he entered the room, he saw this small entity covered with a drape sheet lying on the table, and thought this was must have been a child that was in some sort of an accident. So he looked at the x-rays of the bones and saw that they were close to an osteoporotic type human bone. They had, in other words, they had holes in them, which we call the lacunae. And if that's not a pathological condition, then it's like an archway. It adds a tremendous strength to the bony structure. So he knew that this entity was either sick or it was something strange about it, and then he went over to the table and looked at its face and realized that it was not human. So
and you've interviewed this guy,
to use
right?
For an anesthetic, you know, how do you know what to use for for an entity that you have no idea what their physiology is? But anyway, he did use the local anesthetic, and when he reset the fracture, he was thinking about what to stabilize it with, because we use pins and screws and plates and so on. And the next thing you do is when you approximate the bone, you put one end of the bone next to the other broken end, then you fixate it with one of these devices. When he went to take it apart, it wouldn't move. It had already started to heal.
Oh.
So he never saw anything like that before. So he basically watched as the repair started to occur. But he did close the wound with some sutures. And again, to shorten the story down, the patient left the operating room in satisfactory condition with all vital signs present, ambulatory, and in the company of a military guard, and was taken immediately to another hospital called Hospital Humanitas. The first one was Hospital Regionale.
Okay, Dr. Lear, I just want to make sure that I understood what you said earlier, and that is that you actually did interview this doctor himself.
Yes, he was an orthopedic surgeon, and he spoke very little English, so I had to have an interpreter there. But here's the interesting thing. When we started talking medical language, language was no barrier, because a lot of the terminology used in medicine has its base root in Latin.
Mm-hmm.
So I could understand, pretty well what he had to say. So I understood things that the interpreter did not understand at all. So he described the blood and the bone and the various aspects of the being, and I asked him if there was any communication, and he said, first he said no, and then later he changed his mind and told us that it downloaded information into his head via what he called thought grams, just large amounts of information that he said it was like a rubber hammer hitting him in the head with each one of these blocks of knowledge, and gave him a migraine headache, which lasted for several weeks.
All right, we have to take a break, and we'll be back right after this break. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Dr. Roger Lear. Dr. Lear, when we went away for break, you were telling us about this extraterrestrial and about the doctor whom you interviewed, who did surgery on this extraterrestrial at the command of the military there in Brazil. And then this extraterrestrial was taken then to another hospital. And what happened then?
Well, the surrounding situation was that the back of both hospitals, Humanitas Hospital as well, the street in back of the hospital is residential, so that people can see what goes on through the back side of the hospital. Same way with Hospital Regional. The entity was seen leaving through the back portion of the hospital and placed in a vehicle, and then immediately taken to this other Humanitas, which was a bigger hospital. And it stayed there for 24 hours, and the following day a set of three military trucks pulled up to the back of the hospital with the large trucks with the canvas coverings in the back, and the canvas, of course, was rolled up. Three small childlike coffins were put on the back of each one of the trucks, and each one of them took off in a different direction. Later we learned that one of the coffins contained the entity that was operated on and had left the other hospital in satisfactory condition. So nobody really knows what he died of, but what he had told the doctor mentally, from what I got out of him, he said, "I can't tell you everything, but I can tell you something." He said he felt sorry for the human race. And when the doctor asked him why they felt sorry for the human race, and he says, "Well, for many reasons, but for one, they, meaning his kind, could either singularly or join together and produce any healing of the body that needed to be done. It was not necessary to have a specialist or a specialized place to do this, such as a hospital. And that we, human beings, had the same capability, except we didn't know how to use it. And number two, he said that they felt sorry for human beings because we were totally detached from our spiritual self. So with that in mind, you know, what happened to him? Did he realize that, you know, E.T. wasn't going home and just his spirit left his body behind? Or did something happen to him in the hospital that resulted in his death?
What's the attitude of the Brazilian government?
What we do know, Kevin, is that the young military police officer, whose name was Marco Eli Charese, was dead within 4 weeks of his contact with the entity.
Why? What did he die of?
Well, we weren't able to learn for a long time because the family was not allowed. The burial was not given. An autopsy report was kept away from. They did come up with the medical report and the autopsy report, and when he died, and I had a copy of it, what he did die for was something that was very much like Ebola before the bleed out. So it was some kind of a very, very potent virus that killed the poor thing.
And is it surmised that he got that by contact with this extraterrestrial or by some other means?
Well, it looks like historically he probably got it from direct contact with the extraterrestrial, because later they found out that certain other member of the military who came unprotected in direct contact with these beings also got sick. Unfortunately, they didn't die. Mm-hmm. So,
all right. What's the attitude of the Brazilian government when the investigators there are from anywhere trying to find out how this entity, how this being died? What response do they get from the Brazilian government?
You must be a bit psychic, Kevin, because that was the purpose for me bringing this subject up. Now, I went down there and did a thorough investigation and wrote a book called UFO Crash in Brazil, which is still available, but I wanted to tell you what's happened since all this has gone on.
Okay.
So we can get to that now. Now, the Brazilian government has opened up, and twice they've released top-secret documents to the UFO researchers, A.J. Gerard and some of the others, and they published it. So for some reason, and I think I know the reason, the Brazilian government, the Brazilian Space Agency, is not too happy with the United States, because there was an agreement, which I had on my website for a long time, signed by Daniel Golden, who was the head of NASA. And the agreement essentially was that the United States, if all extraterrestrial materials were sent directly to the United States, the United States would share equally in the commercial aspect and development of all the things that could probably be done with advanced technology. Well, what happened was the Brazilians got nothing, not even a report. So I think the release of this information was kind of a slap to the face of the U.S. Now, lately, within the last 8 to 10 months, there's been some interesting things because two groups from the U.S. have gone down there. One was from the Bigelow organization called BASS, sent investigators to Brazil, and they were given the boot, thrown out. Then six CIA agents were booted out of Brazil. And they went around looking for information regarding extraterrestrial cases in Brazil. And they were just given the boot. Another thing that happened, and this is what I was going to talk about, was there were two main original investigators on this case. One fellow was a labor attorney and still is, and he's a defendant's attorney, and he represents large industries in Brazil. Does quite a good job, and he was been a UFO researcher for many years. Well, he had filing cabinet after filing cabinet after filing cabinet with detailed information on the Varginha case, interviews with military witnesses, interviews with civilian witnesses, the pictures, drawings, all kinds of stuff, very meticulously laid out as any good attorney would do. He suddenly turned around a few months ago and said that the whole case was a lie. It was a rumor. It was a joke. It was a hoax.
Why? What's his motive in that?
I think he was under duress and perhaps threatened, because the last time I went down to visit the doctor and paid him a visit, we waited all day to get into his office, and finally he sat there with a pencil or a pen, not the pencil I believe, in his hand, and he was twisting it and turning it and almost broke it, and it was almost in tears, and said, "Everything that I told you last time was just rumor. Nothing was true." But at the same time, he was telling, again, the interpreter, that I know the doctor is disappointed because he'd like to know more about the bone and the joints and the blood and the eyes and all the stuff about the extraterrestrial being. But nothing happened.
Okay, so...
just rumors, rumors, rumors.
All right, so let me ask you this.
Let's get out of here before somebody gets this guy and kills his family.
All right, so let me ask you this. Now, if the Brazilian government has been far more open and have released classified information to Brazilian UFO investigators, then one would not suspect that it was the Brazilian government that's putting the pressure on these people.
That's right.
So who's doing it?
Well, I would take a good guess.
Okay.
It's got to be some entity of the U.S.
Okay.
Now, the icing on the cake was that the original investigator of the case was not Ubujara Rodriguez, who was the attorney, but a fellow by the name of Vittorio Pacaccini, because this happened on a weekend, and Ubujara Rodriguez was out of Virginia. He wasn't there. So the first investigator on the case was a well-known UFO researcher in Brazil by the name of Vittorio Pacaccini. About 4 months ago, 5 months ago, Vittorio Pacaccini disappeared from the face of the earth. Nobody could contact him. His family didn't know where he was. Gone. Disappeared. People in Virginia were told to keep their mouth shut, not to talk about the case anymore. There was a rumor. Now that, my friend, was a big mistake. because the Brazilians were not like the people in the U.S. during the Roswell era. The Brazilian Civil War was over in 1956. You know, and as the years went by, they didn't exactly forget what the Civil War was like, because the people of Brazil were persecuted. So they, instead of being compliant, they became rebellious. Several mayors, there was two or three mayors that wanted to build a museum in Varginha to attract the tourists, and had already started the building. Were extremely disappointed and very vocal, and said that this was not a rumor, this was a true event. The word got around the town, and the people started talking. Now they're talking again, more civilians and more military people. So what they've done is they made a big, big mistake, because now they've opened up a can of worms. And there's probably going to be a horde of new information coming out about the Varginha case.
Yes. Well, you know, that proves the point, and you've heard me say this. The most powerful weapon people have, the one thing that the powers that be are really terrified about, is that the people will learn to say no.
Yep.
To their control. And so that's what you're describing. The people were told, shut your mouth, it was all just a rumor, and the people said, no, it was not a rumor. In fact, there is a statue of one of the beings there in Varginha.
Yes, and for a long time you could go in many different shops and buy wood carvings of the being.
Mm-hmm.
Now, last time I was there, they were getting harder to find. And I think that was just because, you know, the tourist thing had kind of died down, and they weren't selling. But you watch.
All right. We have to step away for a break, and we will return right after this with Dr. Roger Lear. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Dr. Roger Lear. For those who are watching, let me say again, I realize that, you know, at least on my system monitor, it's showing off and on connection, and so I realize you may be having trouble watching. It is a radio show, and I invite you to listen. All right. Back to our guest, Dr. Roger Lear. Dr. Lear, the investigator in Brazil who disappeared, that's till today, still no word, nobody knows where he is?
That is correct.
Okay. All right. Is he presumed dead, or do they think he may still be alive?
At the present time, I don't know if there's anything new with the official investigation, because my information, most of it comes from certain Brazilian investigators, one notably A.J. Girard, and I haven't heard from him because I think he's working on a project with the History Channel, so he's probably out in the Amazon somewhere.
Okay. All right. Now, let me also say that whatever it is that's interfering with our signal is also interfering with our audio and what's happening. Dr. Lear, sometimes we hear you very clearly, and then sometimes you get pretty far away, and then I have to crank up your volume. But when I crank up your volume, it automatically cranks mine down.
I got the phone pressed tightly against my ear, so I'm okay.
Yeah, I know, because earlier in the show, when we tried Skype, I could see, you know, on the video, I could see that, you know, you had the phone, like, right tight against your face, and so whatever's happening is a technological thing that's happening out there. But let me also say, this is not the first time when you've been with us that we had technology weirdness.
Yeah.
I can go.
I was going to mention that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can go night after night after night after night and have no problems at all. And I can have you, and there's two or three others that if I have you on, then we have that weirdness that takes over with the technology. And I'm sure, you know, we're receiving unrequested assistance.
That may be.
Yeah.
I know I've been at conferences. I've had the entire system go down, and been on the radio, and had my battery fried in my cell phone.
Yeah. Yeah, well.
So, strange stuff. There's so many entities out there that don't want this information public, but. You know, I think we talked a little bit about this last time. One big mistake these big mockers made was allowing the internet to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so.
Because I don't care what they do. You know, if some young kid comes along and can hack into the military missile systems or go into NORAD as they've done before, you can imagine what the case. Well, they'd have to shut the entire internet down. They'd have to cut from every single satellite, which would not allow operation of everything in our country.
Yeah.
So they can't do that.
Yeah. Well, they do invest quite a bit of time and money in targeted harassment, though. And so we get some of that. All right. So let's move from Virginia all the way across the world to Turkey.
Okay.
You personally are one of the witnesses to one of the most dramatic UFO video captures ever. And we had a caller who asked this question not too long ago. And as a matter of fact, I think it was Ryan from Washington. Washington State. And the question was, were there any of the Turkish witnesses to this event that we could interview? And I said, well, the problem, of course, would be language, unless they speak English or unless I had an interpreter. Do any of the Turkish witnesses to this event and to the taping of this UFO, do any of them speak English?
Did any of them what? I didn't hear the last part.
Speak English.
Yes. Certainly Haktan Agudan is actually, I believe he was born in New York, moved to Turkey. So he speaks fluent English.
Would it be possible for you to assist us in making contact with him to see if he would be willing to talk with us?
Oh, absolutely. We could even do a three-way.
Yeah, if we can get your Skype going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we'll put that in the book for a future show. And then and I think that'd be fascinating.
As a matter of fact, mm-hmm. The way coincidence goes, I got my computer on, and right in front of me, here's an email from Haktan.
Outstanding. Well, you know, we'll keep his email address private, but, you know, we won't broadcast that. But, you know, if you can make some contact with him on our behalf and ask him, I certainly would appreciate it. Now, you made some contact on my behalf with someone not too long ago. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later in the show, and that's World Peace One. But
right.
I want to stay with the Turkey incident. Now, just for clarification, have you seen this UFO in Turkey on more than one event?
Yes, 2 years in a row.
And what years were they?
I believe it was 2008, 2009.
Yeah, because there's some pretty... well, the video from 2008 and the video from 2009 really looks like the same identical craft.
Yeah, it does.
There have also been people who have taken the close-up shots of that craft. And, you know, just take a still shot, one frame, and then they've been able to zoom in and enhance and clarify. And there's some pretty amazing images that have come from that. Now, we're going to be taking a break here in a couple of minutes, and we're going to get into those images after that break. But when that first came out, when that video was first released, one of the things that, you know, you read comments in forums and even on YouTube, and of course you have people who are saying, wow, that's fantastic, that's astounding. And then you got, almost immediately you have people saying, oh, it's hoaxed, you can tell it's hoaxed. How'd you respond to that when they started saying it was hoaxed?
Well, you know, it's the same thing I said before about printing scientific material. Yeah, people will look at things that don't have the capability of, you know, doing a correct analysis. They just don't have it. I mean, they have no training in it. They don't know about the power of lenses. They don't consider that the atmosphere is a fluid media, that there is reflection and refraction, reflection, all sorts of optical phenomena occur. And if it's on film, they don't understand the chemistry of film. If it's on video, they wouldn't know whether it's 29.97 frames per second or 30 frames per second.
Yeah.
But when it goes to University of Istanbul, they have those experts there. So, just like I do, I'm not a scientist. I never claimed to be. But when I get results from a qualified laboratory, I've got to listen to what the laboratory specialists are telling me. I mean, you know, most laboratories, are, especially metallurgists, biologists, are full of PhDs in a specialized field. So now one of the inventions that was done on this footage was done in Chile. And it was a Chilean videographer. And I published that on my website, but I went to look for it the other day because I recommended it to somebody. Come to find out that it's been taken down. So I wrote Haktan, and he's going to probably be sending me another one. But I did find two DVDs that I had, except one.
All right, we have to step away for a break, but we're going to pick up right there when we come back. All right, folks, we will return right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Dr. Roger Lear. For those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're delighted that you're here. And my sincere sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away from that first hour. But we're glad you're here now. And we're talking with Dr. Roger Lear about some deep stuff. We've talked about, gotten an update on the amazing UFO crash and extraterrestrial contact that took place back in the late 90s in Virginia, Brazil. And now we're talking about Turkey. He's an eyewitness to the amazing UFO incident and the videotaping of that UFO in Turkey. And as we went to break, I had just asked about, you know, how he handled when comments started appearing saying, oh, it's all a fake, it's a hoax. And so he's been explaining to us how he did that. But let me ask you this now. You mentioned that something about the university in Istanbul. Did they do an analysis of this video?
Oh, yes. They did an analysis that made the front page of every major newspaper in Turkey.
And what was their How did they come down on this? What was their assessment of it?
Their conclusion was that this footage was not photoshopped, that the object was real, that what you're seeing is actually what was there, and was absolutely genuine footage of a UFO with non-terrestrial entities inside.
With non-terrestrial entities inside, I think that's important. Now, the university in Istanbul actually said that in their analysis of it?
Yes, and then the Chilean videographer, really, he went one step further. He used a lot of triangle and mathematics and photographic techniques to blow up the images. And when he was done, you could actually see what the entity
terrestrial entities inside. I think that's important. Now, the university in Istanbul actually said that in their analysis of it.
Yes, and then the Chilean videographer, really, he went one step further. He used a lot of triangle and mathematics and photographic techniques to blow up the images. And when he was done, you could actually see what the entity...
The show. And, folks, you could be watching if you're a member. If you're watching the show... you have on your screen right now some frame captures that have been zoomed in on and enhanced. I did not do this zooming or enhancing. My software would not resolve this as clearly as what we have here. So this was clearly done by somebody with more expertise and better software. But... If you will, what you can see, well, let me back up. And actually, I'm going back all the way back to the shot of the craft. And we can see there's a notch, sort of, in the side of the craft that's facing us. And it appears there are two orb-like things up there. And you enough that you start wondering right there in that notch, what's that? Well, then when you zoom in on that, it makes you wonder even more. What's that? Well, then when you get the clarified, more in focus, less fuzzy picture that I was talking about, you can see it's two entities that look like typical grays, like what we have all been told they look like. But I noticed something, Doctor, in this photograph. I noticed something I had never noticed before. I've seen this photograph before. In fact, you and I have talked about it. But I noticed something I had never seen before. When you look at the lower left-hand picture that I've got up here, there's one, two, three pictures across the top, and two pictures at the bottom. And look at the lower left-hand one, because that's the one that's zoomed in the most. Now, I'm going to even zoom in closer, and you can see it looks like to me that we can see the backs of their chairs. They're seated out on the front edge of their chairs, as if peering over the side. And we can see the back of their chairs, and I can see the arm of the chair.
Well, you know what? I think you're correct.
Have you seen that before?
Yeah, I've seen it before, and I think that was described by the Chilean videographer also. But he went on in great detail. Now, let me give you the background of what we're looking at here.
Okay.
First of all, if you stood on the beach... and you looked out over the ocean, you saw a nice, big, bright moon. And then just below the moon was a dot, a shiny dot.
Okay.
So when we pushed on the moon, the dot also got bigger and bigger and bigger. until it didn't look like a star or a planet anymore. Now, this was about, I think it was over 15 miles from the shore. But we had a camera that was had a 300 millimeter lens and an electronic doubler, so we got close to what's a 600 millimeter lens. So when you pushed on this, the craft itself is being illuminated by the moon. But see, the extraordinary part is that what you're seeing inside is coming from light inside the craft.
Okay.
So that's what makes these things visible and in great detail.
Well, it's absolutely amazing. Just amazing. And so here we have the university in Istanbul who has analyzed the video. They said this is absolutely genuine. There's been no tampering, no hoaxing. Whatever that is out there, it was out there, and this camera shot that, right?
That's correct. There was more than, we had three or four people there. We stayed up from midnight till about maybe 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, you know, the still shot that I'm looking at shows that this was taken on May 27th, 2008 at 2:31 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's the shot I'm looking at.
Yeah.
But when they came back in 2009, it looks like the same craft. But in that one, do you also see extraterrestrial entities in 2009?
Yeah, we saw the same thing, but they weren't as clear. However, we got the ship turned. 2009 vintage, the ship turned at various angles. So if you look at it really closely, you can see it's not a saucer. It's more of a boomerang-shaped affair, what it would appear.
Actually, yeah. Even in this one, from 2008, it appears that this notch is at what would be the front point of the boomerang.
Right.
And it has a boomerang appearance to it.
Right.
That's also very similar to the drawings that Mr. Arnold...
McDonald made of the Roswell craft, right.
Well, no, and Arnold, Mr. Arnold, the pilot that saw several... Kenneth Arnold a few days earlier... he did drawings of what he saw, and it was like this. Very similar.
Yeah, I just had listened to a fellow who has been in the military for a number of years, and he was telling me something that I just couldn't buy. He said from the position where Kenneth Arnold was in Washington and the distance that Kenneth Arnold said those craft were away, skipping over mountains like saucers on water is what he said, that it would be impossible at 30 miles away from a target to identify it. Well, I don't buy that. Plus the fact we don't know whether Kenneth Arnold had a pair of binoculars aboard, so that's the kind of stuff that you get. And this guy is truly believes what he's saying is absolutely true.
Well, there is also this. If the craft were sizable enough, then you could see them 30 miles away.
Sure.
And, if you're in the air and there's a 747 flying along and you're looking at it broadside, if the air is really, really clear and you're at an altitude, to be above the clouds or there's no clouds, no smog, clear air, you can see 30 miles.
Of course you can.
Now, the horizon is out there, But that horizon, the distance to the horizon increases, the apparent distance increases as you gain altitude.
Yeah, of course it does.
Yeah.
It's not only the distance, but the horizon itself enlarges.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why the space shuttle can see two horizons.
Yeah.
Yeah. In front and behind. Yeah, they can see the whole thing. All right, so back to this UFO incident. After the university in Istanbul said, yep, this is for real, what was the reaction in Turkey?
Well, the reaction of the people in Turkey is totally different than what it is here. For example, a conference in Turkey draws 2,000-3,000 people. There's nowhere in the United States where there was ever a conference that drew 2,000-3,000 people to a UFO conference.
Mm-hmm.
And you say the mean average age of these conferences, they draw individuals that are in their 30s, 40s, you know, 20s. You see a lot of older folk at conferences, for example, in the United States. But at the conference, when we at the convention center where the conference was being held, you have to remember that we had fleets of UFOs flying over the conference center every day.
That's cool.
They had all the major news trucks from the television stations out there filming them. So, as I tell people, by the time I left Turkey, I got so tired of looking at UFOs that might as well go, you know, to the airport and watch the planes take off.
It was UFO overload, was it?
Yeah, it was UFO overload. And there was a fellow there that was responsible for the Cumbergus footage by the name of Yeltsin. And he's one of these people who can sit in and all of a sudden get up, run out the door, point to the sky, and grab his camera, and there they are.
So he can tell, he can sense when they're there, huh?
Yeah.
Is he an abductee?
You know, he never admitted to being an abductee, but I'm wondering that myself.
Maybe he's got an implant that's a receiver.
It's possible, but I've known others that, you know, are probably not abductees that get this pit feeling in their gut when there's something around and they'll look up and there's something there. I mean, I've been with people who say, oh my God, look at that, you know, and I'll look up, I don't see a damn thing. And they say, well, you know, there's a craft overhead. I'm not seeing it at all.
Uh-huh. Well,
so,
you know,
that's part of the human condition. I mean, I just had my eye done, so the ophthalmologist was telling me that at about 5 or 6 years of age, about 96% of the ambient light in the world is entering your eye.
Mm-hmm.
By the time you reach 50, you're getting about 26%.
So I'm pretty close to blind then.
Well, you don't think you're blind, but you get just so used to seeing what you're seeing, and no two people see the same thing.
All right, now, along those lines, and you were talking about somebody points to the sky and says, there it is right there, and you say, I don't see a thing. I had a guest here from the UK, and he's a UFO investigator over there. And he had some amazing video of a UFO shooting a laser down onto this lady's yard. And this was taken with an infrared setting on the camera.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't see it. But he was holding the camera.
Yeah.
And she was saying, point it right there. There it is. Don't you see it? And she pointed right to it. So he pointed the camera there. And sure enough, it's on his camera, but he couldn't see it with his eyes.
Right.
But she could.
Well, it's like, you know, cats. cats have very unusual vision and senses. I think a cat can see ranges of infrared and ultraviolet that the human eye doesn't see.
Mm-hmm.
So some animals will, for example, I know in ghost cases, they'll look and they'll follow a ghost right as it walks across the room. You don't see anything.
Mm-hmm.
So animals sometimes have acute detection devices that are beyond the human capacity.
Well, do you think it's possible that certain people, like this lady, do have the capacity to see a little bit into the infrared or ultraviolet?
Yeah, I do.
Well, it was an amazing story.
I tested them, but I bet if they did, that's what they'd find.
Well, it was an amazing story, and we showed the video here on our TV channel during the show. And he was talking about, with his eyes, he's never seen anything out there, and yet on video, he has. And he, as I said, he was holding the camera, doing the videoing, and pointing it where she said to point, and there it was.
Right.
All right, so I want to go back to Turkey for a moment. We were talking about the difference.
I love Turkey, by the way.
Do you? I've never been there, but I've worked with people from there. And one of my very, very, very close friends when I was working overseas, we became, honest to God, like brothers. And he's from Turkey. And Well, I won't say what he was, but he was from Turkey. And I was trying to remember the name of the city he's from. It's not Istanbul, and it's not Ankara, but it's seems like it starts with an I, but I can't remember the name of it. Anyway, let's go back to Turkey. Okay, so we know there's a difference in the way the people respond, like to conferences and so forth. But how did the news media respond to this UFO that you witnessed in 2008, 2009? Did they report it there?
Oh, yeah, they reported it. Everything was wide open. Newspapers, television channels, people all over Turkey watched, have seen that video. You won't find anybody that, watches news. I mean, it's on the major news, like here, You hear about robberies in Los Angeles and car chases. It's just the same thing over there, like with UFOs.
So they just report it as though it's any other kind of news.
Yeah, they've had some close calls over there with airliners and approaching major airports, and these things don't appear on radar, and all of a sudden they're there. Some near collisions have occurred. The whole gamut of stuff.
Is there a city in Turkey by the name of İzmit?
I think so.
I think that's where he's from.
Yeah,
I believe that's right.
I've heard of that city.
Yeah, his name was Yaltsin. But we were like brothers. Okay, so the people there, all over Turkey, they're open and accepted. Do you have a whole core of skeptics over there that are, just hell-bent for leather to discredit and debunk anything UFO?
Oh, yeah, they're all over. I mean, I've even seen them in France, and the UK is full of them and so on. But there are people who have access to the internet and some limited amount of knowledge, and they've already got their mind made up that you see a UFO, it's made by the devil and it's demonic, and maybe you better not look at it.
So the devil will go away if you just don't look at him, huh?
Yeah, I guess so. You don't recognize the devil, and he won't recognize you.
Yeah, I'd rather watch him so I can see if he's getting around behind me.
Yeah, there was an incident that occurred many years ago in Brazil, in which an abductee who was Catholic was told that there was going to be angels from heaven that would be coming down in the midst of this jungle population and convince the local priest there that this, you know, he was correct and so on. So they never forget the story. The whole town got up and started heading in that direction to get there at the right time. Some with the ox cart, some walk, some on horse, some on vehicle. Some of the major media picked it up, so they came in trucks, and news trucks, and so on. And at an appointed time, they waited and waited and waited, and they didn't see anything happen. And suddenly somebody looked between two trees, and they said, there, look. These are the tears of angels. They're coming down, and it was 11 saucer-shaped craft, and they were there doing the rosary beads, and these are the tears of the angel of Mary.
Mm-hmm. All right, so
on the ground, and they prayed, and they did their thing, and the news people filmed it all, and
And did they film the 11 UFOs as well?
Yeah, they filmed the 11 UFOs as well.
Mm-hmm.
These are the tears of the Virgin Mary.
Well, people, you know, people apply layers of interpretation to things. I guess it makes them feel more comfortable with it, but it happens all the time. But see, this has also in the realm of UFOs. I mean, within the so-called UFO community, in that you have people who apply a layer of all-knowing, all-seeing, benevolent beings to UFOs. And then you have people that apply a layer of, these guys could turn us to toast, so they're hostile. So people in the UFO community do that kind of thing, too. All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back right after this. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and the techno weirdness continued through the break. My monitor, my system monitor, that shows me how is everything running. I can look at that and I can tell, you know, are we sending out all of our streams to our radio stations, to our radio affiliates and our internet feeds? Are we doing that? I can see that. I can see whether we're sending out, we have a good strong connection and signal on the TV channel. I can see whether we're recording, and I can see whether we're capturing video. I can see all that on the system monitors. And every once in a while, this system monitor on the TV channel starts blinking, which tells me we have a very tenuous connection, and it may actually, in some places, in some cases, some people may just actually see us as offline, and then, you know, it'll come back on, and then, you know, it goes off. Very weird stuff, and there are certain guests that every time, almost, that I have them on, we have some kind of technical weirdness. And we have such a guest with us tonight, Dr. Roger Lear. And Dr. Lear, not that you caused the weirdness, but you may be the cause behind it. And, you know, we may be getting assistance out there from people that don't want this stuff broadcast. But I was talking about these.
If you get the word around, you see, you know, people won't be calling me anymore because they'll say, you know, I don't want Lear on the show because every time he goes on, you know, my signal goes and my phone goes.
You know what? I don't mind that. I mean, it's a little frustrating, but the people that are behind doing that, if there are people doing this. I mean, sometimes there are, sometimes there's just some technical problem out there, you know, between us and where the signal's going. But if there's people behind this, they're morons, because every time that happens, the audience is just like putting a yellow highlighter over whatever the guest is saying. And because the audience goes, man, this must be important stuff. And so they really remember what the guest has to say, the parts that they get to hear. and the ratings for the show go. And so, you know, if there's people that are behind doing this, I want to thank them for being morons and for doing it, because you are assisting the show in growing, and I appreciate that.
That's one way of looking at it.
Well, I didn't used to look at it that way, because I didn't realize that was happening. You know, when all this first started, I didn't realize the effect that it would have. But once I realized the effect that it has when they mess with the show, I became very appreciative of it. And
that brings me back to the time of Liberace, when he was asked, don't you mind what people say about you? And he says, not at all. He says, as long as they mention my name and I keep going to the bank.
There you go.
Right.
All right, so we were talking about these layers of interpretation. You know, another layer of interpretation that gets put on is in the UFO community. On one extreme is this layer, that all the UFOs are extraterrestrial. Another layer that gets put on is, well, most of that stuff out there is really secret U.S. military stuff. And I've pointed out there's no possibility that that statement can even approach being accurate. Because if it is really U.S. military secret stuff, if most of it is, the person who's telling you that most of it is has to have a clearance higher than the president in order to have that knowledge.
Right.
And if they have that clearance, they ain't gonna tell you.
Of course not.
Therefore, that statement on its face is ludicrous. Just
sure.
Ludicrous. But those are layers of interpretation that people put on it. And when they put these layers of interpretation on it, then they believe it. And it becomes like a religion.
You know, you've got all the aspects of the spectrum, because you got the, you know, people say, oh, they're all extraterrestrial. No, they're not extraterrestrial. They're interdimensional. And no, they're not interdimensional. They're extraterrestrial, but they travel interdimensionally. And, you know, and then, as I said, you have the religious aspect. They're demonic. They're coming in from the devil, and they're going to bring end times, on the 21st of December, because that's what it says in the Mayan calendar. And
By the way, did you die that day?
I don't know, but if I did, I think I came back.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, in order to be free, really free, people have to think free. And the hardest thing to get free from is your own personal chosen belief system. That doesn't mean you have to disbelieve it, but it's hard to get free from that to just think. And
how true. And
yeah.
How I've had to learn that lesson. You know, when I started doing this, and I thought, you know, if I do this, you know, and I submit it to this kind of laboratory, I'm going to get some results, and I'll have some answers. And I got the results, and I had 20 more questions.
Yeah.
And then you do it over and over and over and over again, and all you wind up with more questions. And that's why I tell people constantly in a public venue, if any so-called UFO research, I don't give a hoot whether it's me or anybody else, says they got all the answers, put a finger in each ear and run as fast as you can.
Absolutely. And it comes down to people, not just the general public, but as you said, even UFO researchers. It comes down to people not feeling comfortable by saying, I don't know. And we ought to feel comfortable to say it when that's the truth, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When you don't know, you don't know. But see, the problem is when you pretend you know and you fill in that blank with a belief instead of a knowledge, it becomes a religion, you become defensive about it, and you quit looking for the answer because you found it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, you've mm-hmm. just closed your open mind.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so it's a real battle because, you know, it's I guess, human nature. to want to have things resolved, and we want to have them resolved so badly, we want so badly to have them resolved, that we become willing to allow a whim to become a belief, and then that becomes a fact to us when in fact it's not.
I want to tell you, I just several weeks ago had the honor and privilege of being interviewed by some scientists at a very large, I can't mention the name, electronic corporation who does quite a bit of work for the government. Now, it's more like a university campus than it is an industry, but the people will bring projects in there. And if they like the data and they want to put them to work, they'll put them to work for 6 months and have them develop the data. And if the data looks promising at the end of the 6 months, they're there for another 6 months, or maybe a year, 2 years, or 3 years, until the process is developed. And then it goes out usually to commercial enterprise because, contrary to popular thought, black budget stuff doesn't really make much money for industry. So their mainstream is the commercial products. But they were telling me, Kevin, don't bring us a project that's 10 years in the future. Don't bring us a project that's 100 years in the future. But if you got something that may be 1,000 years for the future, we'll talk to you.
Wow. So they've got scientists working on stuff that would be 1,000 years into the future.
Yeah, they were explaining to me, things that were a bit over my head about the obsolescence of our television communication system. They said it was not only obsolete, but it was antiquated. And they were talking about the study of a butterfly wing and how a butterfly flapping its wing is able to broadcast an aura of colors using a microvoltage. And they duplicated this by very specialized pigmented mirrors. And from satellite communication, which uses multivolts, and you still can't stream 2 or 3 hours of information instantaneously. You still got to wait.
Yeah.
So, it leaves a lot to be desired. This thing takes a nanovolt, and you can broadcast full stream 3, 4, 5, 6 hours of information, with the amount of energy that it takes to flip your finger.
Wow.
So that's the kind of stuff that the technology. You're going out and buying all these flat screen TVs. You might as well throw them in the trash.
Well, yeah, except that's what we get allowed to have access to. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's right.
So there's technology out there in the commercial sector, not in black budgets, but in the commercial sector, that's 1,000 years into the future, and we don't have access.
Right. And they have, I was surprised to learn this, but they have a whole marketing a whole marketing division which goes out to various countries and sees what's the best application for the product and how much money they can predict is going to be made by usage of the product.
If they determine that there's something out there that would be extremely beneficial to the world, but they can't make money at it, are they going to do what J.P. Morgan did and say, I can't put a meter on free electricity, so I'm not going to support you anymore?
That's it. Greed and more greed and greed. But what eventually happens is the greedy eat the greedy, eat the greedy, and pretty soon there's going to be nothing left.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to eat each other. I remember the days of the super there. I remember the days of the super there. I remember the days of the super there. I remember...